I think the price declines are done. Like basically, unless interest rates shoot up higher than they are today, I'd say prices are down maybe 25, 30% from the peak. That's probably it because operating fundamentals are good. Interest rates seem to have stabilized and there's a ton of capital, myself included, just anxious to pick up deals that we haven't been able to get for 5 years. So I think the market for multifamily is at bottom. Debt's available. Equity, again, relative to history is available. That's going to support the market. And those are two big things that differentiate it from last time around.
Welcome to Investing in the US, a podcast for real estate investors, business owners, and aspiring entrepreneurs looking to grow their wealth by investing in US real estate. I'm your host, Reid Goossens, and so far, I've acquired over $800 million worth of investments on various properties across the United States. On this podcast, I interview go-getters, risk-takers, and the best in the business to learn more about their investment journey and the cutting-edge strategies they are applying towards building a legacy. For more on growing your own wealth and by investing in the US, visit www.reidgoossens.com. Today on the show, I have the pleasure of welcoming back a good friend of mine, Andrew Cushman. Now, back in 2007, Andrew left his corporate engineering position to start a business in real estate investing. And he started off fixing and flipping houses here in Southern California. Now, as he sensed a shift in the market in early 2011, Andrew transitioned to multifamily acquisitions and has successfully syndicated and repositioned over 2,700 units to date. I'm really pumped and excited to have him back on the show, but enough out of me. Let's get him out of here. G'day, Andrew. Welcome back to the show, mate. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Good to talk to you again, Reid.
Do you want to bring us up to speed what you've been doing and since we had you on the show all those years ago?
I'd say a good way to summarize the last 12 months is we haven't been doing nearly as much as we would like to. We closed on a couple hundred unit portfolio on March 30th of 2023. Since then, we've analyzed 478 properties and bought precisely zero of them because the sellers want the prices from 2022. And we're saying, hey, things have changed. Here's today's prices. And both of us are like, sorry, no deal. Good news is I think that's about to change. So we haven't been just sitting here waiting. We've been taking that time to really focus on two things. One is improving our operations. And so like, for example, this past December, about a third of our portfolio, the properties had the highest collections they've ever had. And then, you know, some of these things we've owned 5, 6, 7, 8 years. So even in December, by just being, you know, like kind of really doubling down and focusing on some operation stuff, our portfolio is doing well. So that's another thing too. You see all these headlines about, oh, rent declines and insurance is going up and all that. Yeah, it is true here and there and to some degree, but operations are actually still pretty good as a whole. So we've been doing that and then just trying to improve our internal systems and be ready for hopefully a nice wave of acquisitions in the next 12 to 24 months.
A lot to unpack there for the listeners. Let's start with the 400 odd deals that you've underwritten, because I think you're an engineer like me. You probably use that data to help you refine the buy box and really use it as a real life litmus test rather than waiting for the CoStar data to come out or rather waiting for those headlines. So what did you see in those, you know, high level over 400 deals that you analyzed in the last 12 to 18 months? What was the biggest issue you were seeing in regards to why they weren't penciling, you know, and why didn't it make you fit your buy box?
I'd say the two most common things were, well, there are three, but they're kind of related. So like I initially said, the sellers are just expecting too much because they're looking backwards, right? You know, buyers are always looking forward. So sellers are always looking backwards in these kind of markets. But the two reasons that really led to that disconnect is number one, insurance costs. So, you know, the current owner might be paying 300 a unit or 400 a unit, and we're getting quoted 800 a unit. And I'll give you an example. I actually considered selling a property. It's not a syndicated one. It's one that I control outside, you know, without outside investors and all that. And this is in Florida. My insurance is 800 a unit. A off-market buyer came along, gave us a number that I was like, all right, yeah, we'll sell for that now. And they got their insurance quoted at $2,500 a unit.
Wow.
Right? Because they don't have the portfolio presence that we have. So we can get a lot lower rates and kind of leverage properties with each other and all that. And so they weren't able to make the deal work because, you know, their insurance was multiple times of what ours was. So that's killing a lot of deals. And the other is just interest rates. When a couple of years ago, if somebody wanted to sell a property at a 5 cap, and a buyer can get debt at 3.25, then there's a positive spread of, you know, 175. And it's more complicated than that, but just simplifying it, there's, you know, 175 basis points positive spread there, meaning the more debt the buyer gets, the better the returns on the deals, you know, assuming things don't go down. Well, now that same seller wants a 5 cap, but interest, you know, the buyer is going to get a loan with a 6.5% interest rate on it. So that means the more debt they get, the worse the return on the property. Well, how do you fix that? Well, you got to pay a lower price. And so the sellers are like, well, I'm not selling for lower. So that's what we've been seeing, how that's, and we actually track it quarter to quarter, and we measure the spread and all kinds of different factors. 12 months ago, the average difference between asking price and our offer was almost 25%. Now it's down to about 11 to 13%. So it's come down significantly. And we're starting to get, you know, what I would call truly motivated sellers, where they have to sell because they are all either immediately facing or already in a maturity default on their loan. So,
No, well, and I want to quickly touch on what you said there, because I think the market moved really quickly. I could assume, and I can talk because I underwrite deals every day, you underwrite deals every day, but if you went back those 2 years or 18 months ago, you had that positive arbitrage. And just to recap what Andrew was saying to those folks is that if interest rates are less than your going in cap rate, then you know that without doing much more complicated math, you could pretty much get positive cash flow from day one, right? It's called positive arbitrage, right? Now, leading up to the hike in interest rates, that positive arbitrage was shrinking, and coupled with rental rates going through the moon. So you could be like, okay, I'm betting on the come. I'm betting on, okay, I'm going to buy this at a 3.5 cap, but interest rates are 4. So I'm actually not positive arbitrage. I'm negative arbitrage, but don't worry, my rents are going to go up $200 or $300 in the next 6 months. But guess what just happened, which we all didn't underwrite to, right? That was a 500% growth in the Fed Reserve rate, which caused all assets and all cap rates. And I want you to talk about this, the valuations to go down. So when did you see, so going back to those first early deals, you're sort of seeing cap rates in that low 4s. How quickly did you see the cap rates starting to expand in your markets that you look at? And did you change your underwriting approach and be like, okay, well, and remember, like, interest rates took a long time to get from 0 to 5. It didn't just happen overnight. So did you gradually see cap rates expanding, or did you just see people like, nah, still on a 4? Now they're like, okay, now I'll have a 5 or now I have a 6.
Real estate pricing, and I'd say particularly in commercial, tends to be pretty sticky.
Mm.
So I think it actually took a while for cap rate to start to really change, because, you know, and I'm part of the problem too, is I look at our portfolio, I'm like, well, I'm not going to sell any of it right now. Rents have gone up so much the last few years, and the properties, they're cash flowing and, you know, they're stabilized. It's like, well, why would I sell now? And so anybody who hasn't had to sell pretty much isn't. And so what happened is when, you know, I'd call the peak of the market for at least multifamily, I'd call it first quarter 2022. And interest rates, as you said, quickly started to rise. And so what happened is that anyone who's trying to buy is watching the cost of their debt go up. So therefore, the price they're offering is going down. But sellers are like, no, it's worth this. And so for, I'd say, a good year, I guess you could say that cap rates held steady. But in a sense, there were no cap rates because nothing traded. The market froze to, and I think we ended up at, like, depending on who you talk to, somewhere around like 20% of the normal volume, like just nothing's moving. And that's starting to creep back up now. We're starting to get price discovery, which is kind of like, hey, a few properties are trading. It's like, oh, look, this just traded for a 6 cap in 2022 that would have been a 4.75. Oh, okay. Now this is where the market is. So we're starting to get a little bit of that. Things are starting to unthaw a little bit. And of course, also, you know, interest rates have, well, the federal funds rate hasn't changed, but the yield on the 10-year treasury has come down about 100 basis points. And that's, you know, many commercial mortgages are based on that. And that's helped to bridge the gap a little bit and make some deals work that wouldn't have worked, you know, back in October when it hit 5 on the 10-year. So because of that, and then again, you know, in 2022, a lot of sellers had they're saying, well, my mortgage doesn't mature until 2023 or 24 or 25, so I'm not selling. I'm just going to wait and hope this thing gets better. Now, a lot of sellers who have that situation, like, oh, okay, I'm out of time. I've got to sell, even if I don't like the fact that it's now a six cap or whatever. So we're starting to see that price discovery. So really, I'd say cap rates didn't really start to come down until maybe the last, call it 6 months or so, when you know, some capitulation finally started to happen.
I think that question's more around with your underwriting. If you saw the debt market, you would know what you need to pick the asset up for in terms of a cap rate.
Right.
Thus, yes, there's not a live, hey, here's a banner on the wall that this deal sold and I could tag it to that. It was more like, no, I need to back into the, you know, interest rates at the time are going from, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 to 6%. Like, I can only pay a certain cap rate, thus I can only pay a certain amount. And so in real time, you would have seen your underwriting change in the acceptable cap rate that you were willing to pay for it.
Whether the
seller, and that's why they call the bid ask spread, was really, you know, at the party. But I want to pivot and talk a little bit about, like, we've seen a lot more people starting to transact now because of, you know, looming maturities. And are you starting to see those cap rates starting to realize in that higher 5.5-6% cap rates versus those 3-4% from a couple of years ago?
Yeah, we are. We've gotten very close on a couple of deals recently. And when the deals did transact, they were transacting at cap rates that are anywhere from 100 to 200 basis points higher than they probably would have in 2022, and very close to what we were modeling. So yeah, so like, you know, what you were saying is like in our underwriting, when interest rates moved, going in cap rate essentially went up in tandem with interest rates. And that's part of why we couldn't buy anything, right? Because we were like, oh, we need a going in six cap. And they're like, I want a four. And so that's too big of a gap to bridge. We are seeing the cap rates up. I'm going to say, and again, it really depends on your market and asset class, but maybe 100 to 200 basis points in the markets we're in. I think I saw a chart from Cushman and Wakefield recently that had it at, like, you know, 75 or something, but that includes, you know, a lot of different asset classes and markets. But I think the stuff we're seeing is up 100 to 200. And the further down the quality ladder you go, like if you go down to class C, that's where we've seen the most expansion. You know, we're seeing some class C stuff go for, you know, close to eight caps. We're not buying it, but we're seeing it trade there. Yeah.
People wouldn't have underwritten to that value decrease. Mm-mm. And so now, spoiler alert, the assets that are selling today may not be priced at the values that they bought them at, thus they're losing investors' money, right? And some assets are even being priced less than what the debt was placed on them 2, 3, 4 years ago. Hey guys, I just want to take a second to share with you our latest multifamily investment opportunity, the Broadwater at Salado Creek, located in San Antonio, Texas, the market where we've got the most experience in. Now, rapid fire, here are the reasons why we love this deal. It's got fantastic investor returns. We are projecting around 20% annualized investor returns for those people who choose to invest in this deal. The second thing is that all the 176 units are in classic condition, which means we can come in, use our renovation program, and push rents even higher. Thirdly, is that multifamily pricing for properties have fallen more today than they did during the 2008 global financial crisis. This could very well be the best time in the commercial real estate cycle to pick up cheap deals. Now, if you're interested, click in the description or reach out to me directly at reed@rsnpropertygroup.com. Now, let's get back into the episode.
Yeah, we actually just participated in one of those. Again, Reed, could you imagine our mastermind 2 years ago talking about, okay, guys, how do you get a bank to agree to a short sale on an apartment complex? We've been like, why are you even bringing that up? That's never happened, right? So just a couple of weeks ago, we bid on a property and the seller said, okay, we like your offer, but we got to get the bank's approval because our offer was less than the debt that they owed on the property. And it took a couple of weeks. Here's the kicker, though. And this is what happens when, you know, we all talk about building relationships with the brokers and the owners and the sellers. Well, now we've got a new wrinkle in it that you've got the seller, the bank is part of the decision-making process. So there was one other really strong offer. The lender actually chose the other buyer who was lower than us, because that other buyer was willing to take a bunch of other properties that that same owner had also backed by that loan. But those were properties that are in really rough areas that we wouldn't touch. So even though we offered more, the bank said, we want this to be one big transaction. And so we're just going to, even though it's a lower price per door, we're going to go with this other buyer. And that kind of caught us off guard. I mean, because like I said, we were basically being told, yeah, you guys are in, you know, pole position, you should get this deal. The lender came back and changed it and said, no, we're going to approve a short sale, but we're going with this other buyer. And like you said, on every one of those properties, it was 100% loss of equity for the LPs.
I'm hearing that more and more. And it's interesting on other side of the coin that you didn't really think that wrinkle would be a wrinkle now, but it is. And I've been told on recent offers that we've put in at sub what the loan is worth, banks are not going to do a short sale. And so the question is around what does, we've had the bid ask spread reduce because sellers now have to get on board with what buyers are wanting. Now you've got to wait for the banks to get on board with what the buyers are wanting. So it sounds like you're already seeing the cracks starting to appear. But how does this not ring like 2008 in the commercial real estate space, like in your mind, or does it?
It does not. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, the biggest issue in 2008 is we had a liquidity crisis. You couldn't get debt. Equity was scarce. I mean, the first 3, 4, 5 properties we bought all cash. Not my cash. We syndicated it. I wish it was all my cash, but we had to buy because there was no debt to be had. And it was a grind and a struggle just to raise the equity to buy those things for like $10,000 a unit, by the way, right? And it was incredibly difficult. And fundamentals were much weaker back then. Because if you remember from 2003, 4, 5, and 6, if you could sit up in bed and fog a mirror, you could get a mortgage, right? So any tenant that was, you know, basically breathing could say, forget it, I'm just going to go buy a house. And so you actually, you know, in the apartment world, you had trouble with occupancy and rent growth and leasing and all that. And so we took kind of weak fundamentals and then threw a financial crisis on top of it. And then that led to, you know, the great financial crisis and multifamily just getting absolutely obliterated. This time around, fundamentals are actually really good. Rent growth last year, depending on who you talk to, is either flat or maybe down, like I think 0.8%. You know, all of our properties, you know, we're down to like 1,500 units right now because we've sold some stuff off. But one property has lowered rents a little bit. And then all of the rest of them are either holding rents or slightly increasing. Mm-hmm. And a third of our portfolio in December had all-time record high collections. So we're entering this with really strong operations, right? We're not, you know, the properties themselves, unless there's an issue specific to them, that submarket and that operator, the properties themselves are generally doing pretty well. Then couple that with the fact that there's actually tons of liquidity. You can't get you can't get, you know, 80% floating rate debt that you could in 2021. But if you're looking for low leverage, maybe 50, 55% or agency, you can go get that debt all day long. Debt is available, which it wasn't back in 2008 and 9, 10. And then equity, even though it is definitely harder to raise today compared to even 12 months ago, it is still far easier than 2008, 9, 10, and 11. I mean, you see articles all the time about how many billions or trillions of dollars are sitting on the sidelines waiting to jump in. And I think that's going to be a big part of keeping prices in multifamily either, you know, probably pretty much where they are. I think the price declines are done. Like basically, unless interest rates shoot up higher than they are today, I'd say prices are down maybe 25, 30% from the peak. That's probably it because operating fundamentals are good. Interest rates seem to have stabilized and there's a ton of capital, myself included, just anxious to pick up deals that we haven't been able to get for 5 years. So I think the market for multifamily is at bottom. Debt's available, equity, again, relative to history is available. That's going to support the market. And those are two big things that differentiate it from last time around.
I appreciate that. It's on our side of the coin, we are seeing a little bit more delinquency. And we saw, depending on the market you're in, and I think that leads to a higher for longer sentiment that the average renter, depending on the asset class, and we do have some C-plus assets, I won't shy away from that. But the interesting thing that I'm scratching my head about, I don't know if you're seeing this at all, is we're seeing vacancy uptick a little bit. So supply on the new side has really, you mentioned earlier about the supply coming on, but I'm like, everyone keeps saying it's an affordability crisis. Like, well, I know I ain't, my rents ain't nowhere near the new pricing. So I'm like, well, where the hell is everyone going? Like, you know, in the pandemic, you could wake up the next morning and raise rents $300 and anyone would pay for it. Today, it's just like, I've got some occupancy problems as we're getting rid of some delinquency tenants. It's not like it's filling quickly back up again. So I'm not sure if you're seeing any of that play out with the, you know, the higher for longer, people's, you know, pinching the pocketbook on renters and particularly the lower income blue class collar. But then how also supply is impacting that on the existing product in your marketplace.
Our portfolio over the last 12 months, I'd say vacancy is up 1-3%. We had one submarket where this was in Florida, and actually the timing matched when they passed the new immigration law in Florida. Mm. And we only leased to people who are documented, but a lot of them still left too. And for a variety, so occupancy went from like 98% to 88% in like 6 weeks. And it's since now rebounded back to like 94 to 96, but it was a struggle for, you know, 4 or 5 months to get there. But as a whole, our vacancy is up about 1-3%. Here's where I think is happening. Like you said, in COVID was great for renters because number one, like, first of all, no one wanted to live with another human being, right? Everyone could be poisoned. So like, I want my own place. Like, one bedrooms were in high demand, two bedrooms, because hey, I'm going to live in one and I'm going to have an office in the other. Now, as cost of living has just shot up and it's staying that, and it's getting harder and harder to make ends meet, people are doubling up. So it used to be that, you know, again, like the one bedrooms were really, you know, super high demand. Well, now what we're seeing in a lot of our markets is we get people doubling up where they'll vacate 2 1-bedrooms, go rent a 2-bedroom, share the rent, and now we've got 2 1s vacant instead of 1 2. So we're seeing a little bit of that.
Do you have any data on that? Because that's obviously talking about household reformation, right? And yeah. for those listeners out there, again, if everyone's got money in their pocket and you don't want to necessarily live with mom and dad or your, you know, the roomie, you could go out and afford to get your own place in the pandemic. Today, they're reforming those households. So I haven't seen actually any live data besides the stuff that I'm seeing on my own portfolio, which I 100% agree with you. I think a household reformation is the problem. It's not necessarily my person who's paying $900 for a studio at my Class C plus apartment going and getting 8 weeks free at an $1,800 new build. I think it's that reformation that's happening. And I also do think there's a little bit of migration stuff, not as prevalent as like the Californias escaping to Texas, escaping to Phoenix. I don't think that is as prevalent as what we saw in the last couple of years. And maybe we're just normalizing back to the ebbs and flows of the cyclical nature of the rental market. I don't know if all of that makes sense to you, what you're seeing in your markets.
No, it does. And you're spot on. Because I mean, that was one of the, you know, if you look at, not to get into the politics of it, but just, you know, the COVID response of California versus the COVID response of Florida, a lot of people in California said, forget this, mm-hmm. I'm going to Florida or Texas, right? And then mm-hmm. there's like, I'm out. And so that just accelerated that trend that was already happening. And like, now that we're past that, hopefully, I think that the trend is still in place, but it's not, you know, there's not quite that. I mean, I can't tell you how many people over that like 2 year period that I knew personally and neighbors, you know, extended family members is just like, that's it, I'm out, and left California.
Yep. Yep.
And that trend is still in place, but I'm not hearing it nearly as much as I used to, maybe because everyone left already.
But interesting to see, like, you look at all those blue state markets, San Francisco, put San Francisco to one side, but LA and, you know, Chicago and New York, rents in those markets are up now, mm-hmm. right? They're higher than what they were pre-pandemic because people are all coming back. Yet the small states, by and large, rents are down. And that's a combination of less migration and more supply. And so it's interesting that it's flipped now back the other way. So I've got investor mates who are in New York and in LA, and they're like, yeah, our rents are now back to, you know, before pandemic level pricing. And I'm like, that's insane.
Reversion to the mean. You can count on that almost every time in almost every investment category.
I love it. I love it, mate. Last thing before we look to wrap up the show here, have you found the investor sentiment? We mentioned it's hard to raise money. It's not maybe as hard, but for us people who don't have as much gray hair as some people who listen to this show, it seems to be difficult. I don't know, in my shoes, we've had a couple of raises that have gone beyond the closing, and it just seemed to be like a lot of investors are scared. Do you think in general the LP retail investors are done with multi? Like they've had the good run, they made the money, and they're looking for something new now. How do you get them to come back and say, no, this is still continue to be a good investment over the long term?
Yeah, you know, I feel like we are actually back to a healthy place with investor sentiment. Everyone was a little too eager and too rambunctious in 2020 and 21 and 22. I mean, we both had the conversations where investors were like, well, I got this much money. I got to put it somewhere in the next month. You know, do you have a deal? Because if not, I got three more I want to put it in. And they're just like overly eager to just throw money into multifamily. Whereas, you know, now, like you said, I think people are a little more circumspect. They're like, oh, wait, this is not a guaranteed thing. Multifamily doesn't go up forever. Higher leverage isn't always necessarily a good thing. Oh, wait a second. What does it mean for real if I'm an LP and I'm behind preferred equity? Oh, I didn't know that preferred equity can step into the deal and wipe me out, which I've seen that happen to some people recently. And so I think a healthy level of caution has come back into the market. So where I see it is like, the deals that came across your desk in 2022, where it's 85% LTV bridge loan, you know, it's underwritten to 7% annual rent growth, preferred equity piece, you know, all this stuff. I think investors are finally, rightfully so, looking at overly optimistic deals and saying, wait, I'm not so sure. But I do feel like well underwritten, well supported, meaning like there's a, you know, there's data and a true story behind it. Realistically written, underwritten deals still aren't that hard to get funded. Because I think we're just back to a healthy place where, I mean, you know, I remember we had a deal in 2021 that sold out in like 27 minutes or something like that.
That's insane.
Which was like, in a sense was kind of cool, but it's like, okay, it shouldn't be that way. You know, people, it should take, you know, a little bit longer. And part of it too is, I mean, you know, my first deals in 2011 and 12 and 13, you know, our experience back then was like, we were happy to get to raise enough to be able to close on time. And then, you know, 3, 4, 6 months down the road after closing is when we finally finished it. Mm. And then, you know, the market kind of shifted to, you know, I remember people in the last few years would cancel flights so that they could be sitting at their computer when a deal went live. And now I think that same deal, instead of taking 27 minutes, might take a week or two or three. And that's how it should be. So, you know, it's just making it so I think the stronger operators are having to work harder. But for the long-term health of the market, I think that's a good thing. So anyway, the short, I guess it's probably more than you were looking for, but the short version is I think we're back to a healthy skepticism, which is good for the good operators in the long term.
I love it. I love it, mate. Look, want to get your 2 cents for what you've got planned for 2024 and beyond. What's on the cards?
We're excited. Like I said, we've spent the last 12 plus months just kind of like trying to lay the groundwork for the next level of expansion. So we're hoping to buy 3 to 6 properties this year. If we can, you know, finally close that bid ask spread, I think that could actually happen. And then we're looking to hire an asset manager and an admin support person. And again, hopefully, you know, set things up. I think anyone who owns the right good multifamily properties in 26, 27, and 28 is going to be really, really happy they own them. So the next 2 years are the time to get them added to the portfolio.
Yeah, love it, my friend. Well, look, I want to thank you so much for jumping on today's show. It's been many, many years since we've had you back on the show. Where can people reach you to continue the conversation that will be in your sphere? Where do they go?
You can always go to our website, just Vantage Point Acquisitions, vpacq.com. There's a couple of tabs on there to connect with us. I am not a dancer. I don't make good thumbnail faces. So I'm not on most social media except LinkedIn. I do consistently post on LinkedIn. And if you comment on anything, that is me responding to you. It's not a virtual assistant somewhere in India or anything like that. So if you'd like to have a conversation on social media, please connect with me on LinkedIn, and I look forward to doing that.
Now, that was vpa.com?
vpacq.com.
vpacq.com.
Yeah, well, mate, that is the embodiment of a beginner mistake. When I back when I started this in 2011, it was all about the acquisition, right? Get the deal. So we became Vantage Point Acquisitions. Well, where you actually make the money is operating it well, but it's too late to change the name of our company. So,
well, mate, look, I want to thank you so much for taking some time out of your day. I just want to reflect some of the things that I took away from today's show. I think that just your time in the saddle is really invaluable. And I think for so many people listening to this show, understanding that you've had that time since 2008, you've seen the cycles come in and out, and your optimism. I think it's a healthy dose of optimism right now that you do think that the multi is still a great area to buy if you can get it at the right price. And I think we're starting to see that come into today's market. And I know that, you know, we know each other personally on our mastermind level, but we're all chomping at the bit to try and get, you know, these deals back up and running. And I do wish you the best with getting 3 to 6 acquisitions this year. But to leave anything out, my friend?
No, I think that was good and I enjoyed it. You know, I mean, there's a lot of negative headlines out there, but part of the reason for that is that's what gets clicks and sells ads. So filter that stuff out and look, you know, approach it with a healthy dose of caution. But man, now's the time to go make some deals happen. So
thank you again for jumping on today's show. Enjoy the rest of your week and we'll catch up very, very soon.
I will. All right. Take care, man.
Well, there you have another cracking episode jam-packed with some incredible insight from Andrew. Remember, head over to vpacq.com to check out everything that he's doing over there at Vantage Point. And remember, check him out on LinkedIn. That's Andrew Cushman on LinkedIn. He is not a bot. He will respond to you. I want to thank you all again for taking some time out of your day to tune in to continue to grow your financial IQ, because that's what we're all about here on this show. The easiest way to give back is to give it a 5-star review on iTunes, and we're going to do this all again next week. So remember, be bold, be brave, and go give life a crack.